Ann Eshelman, thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm interested in how a former public defender ends up in Cambodia working with elephants.
Isn't that typical?
After retiring from your law practice, you stumble across this ad, and the next thing you know, you're on your way.
Yeah, I've always loved animals. I've always been a real animal nut. I've done quite a bit of traveling, and it seems like the older I get, I don't really enjoy museums and galleries very much anymore, or shopping in big cities. And I find that I like going to rural areas much better. And the best memories I always have when I come back from a trip is, you know, some dog that I met someplace, or some, you know, some pet that somebody had at a little hotel. And so I thought, well, why not go specifically to the animals?
And so can you kind of paint us a picture, like what was it like there at the elephant sanctuary?
First of all, I flew all the way to Phnom Penh, and then they picked me up and drove me about 6 hours through rice paddies and really flat areas until we got into the hill country. And the elephant project was located on tribal land that is owned and populated by the Penang people of the northeastern area of Cambodia, very close to the Vietnam border. The regular hill country was incredibly deforested. Cambodia is such a poor country that even the national government of Cambodia sold their largest national park to the Chinese, and they just completely logged it over. But the tribal people have so far been able to hang on to their land. And so you go from going through this just total devastation to beautiful jungle. I mean, it's really nice jungle around this camp. And it was extremely remote. Go down a little mountainous road, a little red clay road, and curve around through the jungle and stuff, and you wind up at some buildings that look like they were just scrapped together yesterday, and there you are. You're at the elephant valley.
And describe for us what's the background on these elephants. They're coming from being badly treated, right?
Yeah, very badly treated. These are old elephants that had been in the logging and some in the tourist business, giving rides to people and things like that. But all of them had really suffered. An elephant is supposed to eat about 20 hours per day. They eat very rough food, and they have to eat a lot of it. So working is really hard. They can't eat often enough. And, of course, it's hard to control an elephant. It's a big animal, of course, and you can't put a bridle or anything on it like you can a horse, and so it's hard to control them. And so people controlled them cruelly. One elephant had a hole carved in her forehead about 6 inches by 4 inches, and she had been difficult to control, and so they had used that to insert a hook into her forehead to control her, and kept it open for 30 years while she was working there so that it was tender enough for her to control her that way. They all had a very sad past, and this place gave them a place to be old elephants. Some of them were as much as 70 years old.
Wow. 70 years old.
Yeah.
And so what was your day like here at this rehab center? You were kind of taking care of the elephants.
Yeah. What we did is in the morning we got to, as we used to say, just hang out with the elephants. And so we'd watch them rove around through the jungle, and we followed them and watched them eat, eat and more eat. And then right before lunchtime we would take them to this shower facility that they had rigged up for them, and we would bathe them. An elephant needs to be bathed twice a day, so we would bathe the elephants with scrub brushes and hoses and scrub them right down to get them real clean. And that's, of course, how I bonded with the elephants, because when you're right next to them, scrubbing them with a brush and hosing them down, you know, you get up close and personal with them. And one day I was standing on a rock while I was doing that, the first day actually, and I felt something going on with my foot. And I looked down and here the elephant's trunk is tapping all around my foot. You know, I think it was just sort of sniffing me out like a dog will do, you know. And after that, we were good friends.
I mean, I just can't imagine you know, being next to an elephant for the first time?
I couldn't either. I really couldn't. I mean, I had horses when I was a kid, and so I'm used to a relatively large animal, but elephants are a lot bigger than that. And under the circumstances, you just have such a huge respect for them, and you feel like, you feel so flattered that they accept you and that they will, you know, accept your being there and actually seem to indicate pleasure at your being there. I was stunned to find out that elephants purr, or I called it purring anyway, but they, like a cat, they'll make a guttural sound deep in their throat, and it sounds like butter, 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 like that. And that's what they say when, that's what they do when they're feeling content.
You were only there about 2 weeks, but it sounds like this, it did have a lasting impact on you, and you're still involved with this kind of work.
Well, it had a huge impact on me. If I go back to my environmental ethics class at Nicolet, I often found how we'd focus on all these problems, and then I would always ask the students the last week of class, well, what are you going to do about it? How is the knowledge of these things going to change your life? And I never, ever had anybody answer that question. In the 4 times I taught environmental ethics, I've never had anybody give me anything more than a blank stare, like, what can I do? You know, what am I supposed to do? Global warming? I'm one little person, you know. What can I do? And I understand that feeling of helplessness. I think many of us feel helpless, that these issues are just way too big. But I really admired these young people at this camp. There was a young man who ran the camp, a 26-year-old British guy. He had worked for Domino's Pizza, of all places, in London, and had gotten fired. And he decided to take a trip to Asia just to sort of lick his wounds. And he went to Thailand, and there's a huge, very famous elephant camp there. And he wound up spending a lot of time there. And he fell in love with elephants. He just loved elephants. And while he was there, he started to hear about the elephants of Cambodia, that there were a lot of elephants that were in dire trouble, but there wasn't any rescue camp for them there. And so he thought, well, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to go do it. So he goes to Cambodia. He learns the Khmer language, found out that there was all this land, thousands of acres, tens of thousands of acres in northeastern Cambodia that was tribally owned, sort of what we would call reservation. He just decided to go up there, and he worked out an agreement with them where if they would allow him to graze elephants on their land, he would employ them. He would provide very basic medical care and very basic educational services for the tribe, and that would enable them to resist the temptations to sell their land for logging. And I was just so impressed, because these tribal people are just enormously poor, unbelievably poor. By American standards, we would just gasp at the poverty of the people there. And prior to the elephant camp coming there, they had a 50% infant mortality rate. But since the elephant camp had been there, they hadn't lost a single baby. Not a one. Just from having the ability to see when a baby needed acute medical care. And so he frequently said, I came for the elephants, but I stayed for the people. And I wanted to take it one step farther and say, well, not only did you do it for the elephants and the people, but look at the environment. I mean, here you have this island of beautiful jungle in the middle of a devastated country where, you know, you're lucky to even see a tree in central Cambodia. So, you know, talk about a win-win situation.
Well, thank you, Anne. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.